incredible surveys, and yet they never describe exactly what they do and how they get published really mostly. And we want to increase awareness of patient-centeredness, the concept, and ethnomedical science, hugely important. Ethnomedical science, basically in a nutshell, it's the study of how different cultures and populations perceive health and illness, how they align themselves to the healthcare, and the social organization of that care. It may be biomedical, it may be alternative, it may be home therapies. So it's very different. We differ in our perspective. You say, how do you feel? I feel good. Are you stressed? No, but if you measure stress, you see that some populations, like race ethnic populations, are high. Their norm, their default level of stress is very high. So that's what we're trying to do with this.
Oh, see?
All right, so what is the primary, well, here's the Seymour perspective, which means we're not agreeing with everything, and so we're just giving you a perspective from where we're coming from. And jump in on these things and help us further develop it. Primary objective of improving health literacy is to enhance a person's capacity, right, to affect behavioral changes that may translate into improved health-related quality of life outcomes. So it's all about behavioral change. At the end of the day, if there's no change in how you approach your health and your wellness, nothing's going to change. I mean, just going to a doctor regularly is a behavioral change, when you think about it. Then there may be other very significant changes in behavior, such as nutrition, physical activity, compliance to medications. Those are all very important behavioral changes. Okay, Institute of Medicine, the ability to obtain, process, and understand basic health information needed to make appropriate health decisions and follow instructions for treatment. I've always had a problem with this definition, but it's the IOM. Remember this commercial years ago, I'm dating myself, but who with Merrill Lynch speaks, people listen. IOM speaks, oh, that's the IOM. You better listen to them. This is too narrow. It's lacking, think about it. They're saying ability, they're talking about the ability. What does, that's one component, accessing. So that ability to obtain speaks of access. Access is at different levels also. I'm accessing this computer, I have access. Can I use it? Then using it is not the access issue. So that for me is just too narrow. Process, what does process mean? Manage, deal with, or navigate. But we have issues with navigation, don't we? Because this definition says nothing, when perhaps it shouldn't, about how to navigate. These are the pretty much interventions that we're trying to develop. Help people navigate. And understand it bespeaks of knowledge. So what is it about that? We need to access, we need to navigate, and we need to gain knowledge. But is that really talking about health literacy per se? You know, if I look at somebody and what do you know about your health? I quizzed him on health in the car ride last week, and it was pretty cool. Alrighty. How about World Health Organization? Achieving a level of knowledge, personal skills, confidence to take action to improve personal and community health by changing personal lifestyles and living conditions. Now we're getting somewhere. Now we're getting somewhere. Because now we're talking about what IOM or National Academy spoke, knowledge. But knowledge does not necessarily mean health literacy. And that's why, because knowledge alone is not health literacy. It has several components, and we'll get to that. So knowledge, you need learning. Personal skills, self-management. This is a huge part of helping your patients improve their outcomes, is to somehow improve their self-management. And that's an individual thing, as anybody that practices knows. And some patients are not ready. And then comes this trans-theoretical model of behavioral change, where some people are at different stages of readiness to change. And it's a very interesting model that's been used for many years. Confidence. Confidence speaks of self-efficacy. Do I feel confident that I'm managing my care properly? Do I feel confident that I'm seeing the right doctors or going to the right clinics? So in confidence, Bandura, I should say, is one of the fathers of the concept of self-efficacy and self-efficacy's role in behavioral change. If I feel confident about myself, I'm more likely to change my behaviors. So behavioral change, again, comes up as important in the whole umbrella of health literacy. To your more perspective,
can you go into the
between ability, because I can't see what ability.
Oh, yes. Can you go back to the?
Yeah.
Can you comment a little bit more on what, you know, you've underlined changing personal lifestyles, but not the living conditions.
Oh,
so I don't know if it's...
Hold on a second, I'll underline it for you. Okay.
So I don't know if it's intentional
actually, that's a typo. I should have underlined living conditions.
Right. So, knowing you, you know, and your interests, I think it's unintentional, but the way in which you've been, you know, talking about it so far is really focusing on the individual as a almost a
pretty
decontextualized,
much.
Atomized,
yes.
You know, person. And I think it's relevant that WHO tends to take a more contextual,
populations,
you know, approach. And, you know, some ideas that have been useful for health education in general and literacy, you know, in particular, explicitly emphasize more collective knowledge to understand
Absolutely.
What makes people healthy or not. You know, Paulo Freire's pedagogy and, you know, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
That can be very useful. And folks with low, you know, traditional, you know, literacy, maybe they can't
even
read.
I intentionally
left out the
whole concept of population health literacy in this talk. Time-wise. But there is a newly evolved whole concept about population literacy. And this is pretty much why I really like this definition, because it talks about community health and it talks about, you know, living conditions, you know, it talks about environment and its effect on your health and how do we change that. But I agree with you totally. And I'm glad you brought that up, because there is a whole nother area of study that deals with community level health literacy by promotional programs and population health literacy. And that's just evolving, so thanks for that.
But, yeah, just, I mean, this country tends to be a bit of an outlier. We tend to treat people as individuals. And sure, there is always going to be room, no matter what your circumstances, to forge, you know, create your own personal space and make
and
better choices. But the alternative also exists, which we tend not to focus on so much, which is to collectively act to change, you know, that context. You know?
The IOM's definition as opposed to this one.
Right, exactly.
And that's
right.
A good example of that.
So just as
narrowness.
If you think about, you know, writing this up and different things, maybe be explicit on what you are and are not talking about. It's okay to make the choice to talk about
Absolutely.
Individual level. But
what's good about what you're saying is that all the more reason for us to understand how to measure. Because if we're going to measure on a population level, we need standardized surveys and tools that we can use. That's a very important issue. Thanks for that. Anybody else? Any other question? You can beat me up. Come on. That's what this is about. All right. Feel sorry for me, do you?
No.
Anyway, what I was saying here is that here the IOM is saying the ability to, and who is saying achieving. So what's in between the ability to and actually getting there? You know, there's a substantial gap in understanding about how best to improve access to understandable and culturally and linguistically appropriate information that may enhance health literacy, but importantly, usable surveys to measure health literacy, and that's where this presentation is going. Okay? So this is a barrier to mitigating health disparities, not knowing how to measure what we intend to improve to develop or to devise to see whether or not it works. We'll get to that, but this is what I want to get to. So what are the components of health literacy based on those definitions? Learning, skills building, confidence, compliance, and outcomes. Our argument is that what's being touted as health literacy measures are not doing that. In fact, I don't know anyone that does. Recently there was a pretty comprehensive paper that indexed just about every health literacy measure globally, and yet none of them were doing this. You see top of the realm and everybody's using that, but these constructs, how people learn, what their skills are, how confident they are, we can measure that. Their compliance we can measure, and their outcomes we can measure. So what do we do with these components of health literacy? Well, let's look at them, how they relate to each other. If I learn, I build skills, I gain confidence, hey, the better I golf, Huh? The more confident golfer I am. When I play baseball, the better I hit, the more confident I play baseball. It's true. Your confidence really does help with compliance. My skills are good, my confidence is good, let me comply. And this has been shown large bodies of literature to be true, and outcomes improve when you comply. The other thing, though, to remember that skills also impact compliance, and learning also impacts confidence. This is not the perfect model, this is just the prototype. Ron,
so can you comment on, I know you're going to talk about the measures, but did the people who developed the existing measures refer to these definitions? And, you know, people are going to say there are gaps and they don't assess these things. What was their conceptual framework? Or,
yeah.
Was it like this? Or?
Let me get closer to your mind.
Okay. So you say you're coming up with this. Did, for example, Dave Baker refer to the WHO and IOM definitions and recognize this and just somehow come up with a measure that was different from it? Or did they have
I took from their definitions of health literacy and other definitions that I've read, right. Which just about every paper you read says the same thing. Health literacy is the ability to obtain health information. It's like la-di-da-di-da-di-da-di. So I'm saying, okay, let's take these definitions. What are the key components? And I did, and I made a list. They're pretty good. I would say that with all the publications, hundreds like that, these five are pretty much. And how does health outcomes? How is that a measure of health literacy? The whole premise behind improving health literacy is to change outcomes. So how do we measure that? We'll get to that. But yes, Ron, it's something from pretty much reading and noting, and it's just IOMs comes the closest to this of all of them. But none of them talk about outcomes. And I added that. So that's the outlier. And I'll show you why. We could take those components and translate health literacy components to constructs for health literacy measurement. Learning is knowledge. We know we have to increase knowledge, and that's general knowledge, say, about disease, what diabetes is, for example, risk factors. Skills building is about self-management. If we can improve people's self-management, self-monitoring with blood glucose, which is a very important one, as you know, in diabetes, that skill is really important for what? For diabetes. Looking at your toes and drying your toes, between your toes every day. That's very important. So skills, learning, knowledge, skills building, self-management, confidence is self-efficacy. How it's actually perceived self-efficacy. Okay, it's very important to note that when we measure self-efficacy is that person's perception of how confident they feel to take on a task. Or to manage themselves at home, say, of doing that self-monitoring blood glucose. Compliance is about behavioral change. How many times have people not complied with whatever you do? You don't have to be an MD or nurse to know that even in research, people do not comply. How do you change that behavior? How do we change the compliance behavior of minorities not responding to surveys? We're working on the CAPS now, Consumer Assessment of Health Plans, Health Providers and Systems, and we know that Latinos, for example, are not responding. Why? How do we change that behavior? How do we get them to comply? So outcomes, I say, should be not the outcome hemoglobin A1C and diabetes. We can measure, did you check your feet? We could measure how many times did you check your blood sugar at home as an outcome, but that's more of compliance. But if we measure simply general health-related quality of life, you follow? If we measure physical functioning with one item, emotional functioning or state with one item, imagine that we have that information. No matter what happens with that person with their disease, with this health condition, whatever it is, at the end of the day, did it improve their quality of life? Did it? I mean, cancer patients get chemotherapy, quality of life takes a plunge. But further down the road, did it improve? So whatever happens on the level, I think, whether it be serological or clinical presentation, how does a person feel about themselves? Because at the end of the day, how we feel about ourselves and our life is what counts. You know? So I believe that we should measure health and data quality of life not a whole lot of stuff, 12, we can do that, short form 12, but even just a few items, I think suffice. Why would you say so? In terms of not the whole thing, but we'll lose some things in terms of measurements, but I think that would suffice.
Well, Promise has global items, for example. Yeah, single items you can use. So why wouldn't you put the clinical measures in there too, though? Why wouldn't you include the clinical measures? You could have them as intermediate.
For outcomes? I'm not saying you can't.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to also look at those. Yeah,
no, there are some that should be included, but that now goes to this. Depends on what type of health literacy we're measuring. If we're measuring general health literacy, there are things everybody should know. We also know that smoking's bad for you, but do people smoke like fiends out there? I mean, it blows me away. In New York City, I mean, as bad as the air is, and they're puffing away in midtown Manhattan. They know it's bad, but they still don't comply. But general health literacy, what is that? What should we know? So I'm on you now. What should everybody know about health?
Oh,
yeah.
What should everybody?
Getting to one thing.
Healthy diet.
Yeah.
Stress management.
You know what I mean? What the one thing you think everybody should know? It has nothing to do with disease specificity. How to get to the doctor? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would be probably the least important thing, you know? Stay in school, get a job, you know?
See,
have somebody that you can turn to, you know, when in terms of stress management, you know, who is there that you can talk to when, you know, when you're stressed out?
What about importance of exercise? Sleep.
Right.
Who are you
guys?
Victor?
Oh, I was going to say... activity, fitness, and exercise, diet, all that stuff.
Kind of the same. I'm thinking of like fat or calories in food, what we should know about them.
Diet too, but the book, The Big Fat Surprise. Yeah. Eat a lot of fatty foods and stuff.
And you know, something that's as say, check your blood pressure. Everybody should know that just to have their blood pressure checked. And, you know, everybody should know that, even if you feel great. And those kinds of things, general health literacy. But then there's disease-specific health literacy, and these are things that a person must know about their condition. You know, to help learn about self-management, you must know these very specific things. If we measure generally, we're going to miss that. Does that mean we need many disease-specific health literacy surveys?
So, I'm trying to wrap my head around the main distinction between the general and the disease-specific. So, in my mind, it seems like the general is a very public health approach that cuts across kind of like the medical field, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the disease-specific is more like a clinician kind of perspective on managing health.
Yes, because when we think about health promotion efforts right now, in terms of immunization, it is a public health. So, and it does fit what you're saying, Nancy, that general health literacy then is related to what the general public health should know. Going back to,
right.
I mean, people should know certain things, no matter what your situation is, whether or not you have a disease. You should know what diabetes is, I believe. Everyone should know what diabetes is. You don't have to have it. I think that's general health literacy, not specific. You know there's a problem with blood sugar. You may know, everybody got it, you know, some obesity, but do you know how to specifically manage it? Do you know that you have to see an ophthalmologist? Do you know that non-traumatic amputation, blindness?
Push back a little bit, right? Because, like, say, you know, for people who don't have capacity, all they need is somebody around them who understands that, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get them to take it, whether it's a kid who clearly doesn't have, you know, so they have a parent, or the other way around, you have, you know, the geriatric, you know, patient who also has limited, you know, cognition as the kid, caregiver, you know, the whatever. So, you need somebody to And then people can have all kinds of funny ideas about how the body works. I mean, I had a funny conversation yesterday about the pancreas. You know, you got A1C is like 11.7. You know, you got to work to get A1C that high. You know, but in the end, it doesn't really matter what he thinks about it, as long as he agrees to start insulin, which he had previously resisted. As long as you get somebody to realize, look, I don't know what the hell's going on, but at least I trust this person. You know, I understand that there are consequences. I know other people, have had those bad consequences. They've lost their foot. They, on dialysis. They can't see. Whatever it is. So therefore, I'm going to do what this guy says. Or if I can't do it, I'm going to find somebody. You know, I guess I mean, don't get me wrong. Health literacy is one of the best predictors, right? Particularly, in low educated, communities of outcome. To some degree, it's going to be...
The health literacy is not just about the indigent. It's really
No, absolutely. Well, fine. But it is an indicator that many things are falling apart for that person. And I think a lot of that has to do with just how you navigate the world, honestly. I mean, how do you actually keep your appointments? How do you keep track of just basic things? Like, taking a pill every day. We tend to focus on, as clinicians, understanding the pathophysiology and stuff. And I'm going to say that all that is probably a distant
third. I agree with you on this point.
Compared to just how to actually make sure that the stuff that needs to happen and to have just enough understanding so that you value it. So that, compared to all the other hierarchy of, demands to take care of your, other family members.
I agree with you on this. You don't have to know everything about diabetes. I'm saying use diabetes because that's my focus. Okay, having a stepdaughter type 1 since she was 7, and even before that. You don't have to know everything about diabetes to take care of. In fact, you don't even know how to read, and that's fine, and I could improve your health literacy. So, but the point is, and that child eventually is going to be an adult, and that aging, cognitively burdened person was once an adult with cognition. So everybody at some point in their lifespan, perhaps you should make that clear, at that point of the lifespan when you're responsible for yourself or others, then you really should have a general knowledge of health and general health literacy. You'd be amazed how many people don't. You could take somebody with a graduate degree who all of a sudden comes down with a condition, know nothing about it, they are not health literate with respect to that condition. They're not. They will read on it and they will gain traction on understanding, and perhaps they become self-managers that are better than the person who cannot read well because most of what they're given is written or online. And that there's the access issue. But I agree with you that you don't have to know everything. They don't need to know about amylase. They don't need to know. They should if you're measuring it. And this is one of the biomarkers for them as far as their pancreatic health. We know that. But I don't believe that my patient has to know every little detail about their condition. They need to know what they need to know to take care of themselves. And they need to know how to change their behaviors. So I agree with you there totally. The health literacy thing for me is not about you're going to be a total expert on diabetes, Mr. Jones. No, I need to tell you about how you need to self-manage yourself at home. You need to check your blood sugars, check your toes, see the ophthalmologist, look for these signs and symptoms. Things like that. Have your A1C checked, the ABCs, A1C, blood pressure, cholesterol. Keep it simple. They don't have to know about high density and low density. I think that confuses people.
Yeah. So I see this, as you know, I do malaria work in Southeast Asia, so people try to do these knowledge, cap surveys and stuff. So they say, well, what's the cause of malaria and all that? That's just a big waste of time. All you need to know is if you have a fever, what do? You go and you get tested.
I hear you.
That's it. All that other stuff is just a big bunch of clutter. Bananas and mangoes that doesn't matter. And then, if it helps you, it only would be useful if it helps you, sleep under the net. But in the end, I don't really care.
That's right.
Just as long as sleeping under the net can help prevent malaria, it's important, and then you do it. I don't care. what you're doing, and I feel that and so when you're thinking about which indicators and how to measure and all that stuff, and looking for a parsimonious way of tracking things, you know, I've tried to convince people, just forget about it. I don't really care about that. It's hard to push back because some of them are standardized, right? They get sort of, you know, enshrined, even though no one ever does anything with those, and they don't actually end up changing much of anything, you know, except distracting us to maybe do a lot of education on stuff.
And one of our challenges with this whole thing about developing interventions, for example, right now we're putting together a series of animated videos in diabetes as part of a project we're submitting. And the question is, what do they need to know about general knowledge of diabetes? What do they need to know about self-management? What do they really need to know about clinical management?
And that's, if you start feeling like this, you know, when you're shaking, you know, then you need to eat something, you know?
Right.
Like,
exactly.
If there's a hypoglycemic, I don't really care how much, how you
But how do you know
that?
That's not falciparum shakes?
Yes, I happen to live over there, right, sure.
All right, let's move on. All I'm saying about general health literacy, that everybody should know about, not the epidemiology per se, to be an epidemiologist, but that it's widespread. If you know diabetes is widespread, you know hypertension is widespread, obesity, you know it's endemic. Mm-hmm. And I had a to-do about this with somebody at NYU. I said, isn't diabetes endemic? No, it's epidemic. And endemic means this. I said, but isn't it endemic to our globe, to our planet? It is. And they couldn't see beyond that, you know. But anyway, everybody should know about primary prevention, immunization, and that, you know, nutrition that was mentioned, being active, that helps health. Everybody should know that they should have screening biomarkers like PSA, you know, prostatic antigens, hemoglobin A1C, and many now, and access to health, you know, how they can get access. Everybody should know where to access health, and about insurance differences, because that's big now. People just don't know the difference in their insurance plans, and those that don't have insurance, where they can access. So we went through that with a breast cancer study years ago, mammography screening. As soon as these women knew where to go for a free mammogram, these Latinas went, and they did go. Anyway, just for disease-specific, see more perspective, number five, to the degree to which a person's level of knowledge, self-management skills, confidence, permits compliance with clinical management of these specific conditions and affects health-related quality of life outcomes. So that's a definition that we put together. It's evolving, but at least it hones in on outcomes and disease-specific. I think that's important. At least I do, in all the years I've been dealing with this health literacy issue. That's what's been missing for me. All right, let's move on. So we talked about that. Let's just get to the measures because we're running out of time. So what is out there right now? These are four of the most commonly used measures right now. Okay, newest vital sign was developed by Pfizer, and you can get online at newestvitalsign.org. It's, I'll get to details about that, but it's not really a clinical assessment, even though that's how they tout it, and it's not really a measure of literacy. We'll get to that. Realm, Rapid Estimate of Adult Literacy in Medicine, it's used in clinical venues, and it's also used for research. SALSA, Short Assessment of Health Literacy, Spanish-speaking adults. I like the name. I like the name. SALSA, dance. Anybody dance SALSA?
Yeah.
All right. And TOFLA. Everybody's heard of the Test of Functional Health Literacy in Adults, right? And they have some very similarities. The only thing is that TOFLA does not have a clinical application. It just doesn't. But it's for research mostly. Well, let's move on. All right, let's talk about newest vital signs. It's administered while other vital signs are taken. Blood pressure, all right, and pulse, respiration. Could you imagine giving somebody a survey while you take it? They're going to be looking at this, and they're going to get a little upset. Their pressure's going to rise, their pulse is going to rise. I don't know why they would do that. They would just do it separately. In a private place, quietly. Score of 0 to 1 suggests likelihood to extend more of limited literacy. 2 to 3, possible limited literacy, and 4 to 6, almost always indicates adequate. So I got a problem with the scoring system. You go from likelihood to possible to definitely, and there's no in between. Somewhere there's something's missing there. But anyway, the verbal introduction that they suggest you give reads at 11th grade level. So if you're dealing with populations with limited literacy, but I'm reading it to them, then we bear down on the concept of oracy. Oracy typically defined is just the development of one's communication skills. That's too one-sided for me. On the other side, the person you're communicating with is receiving. And if your experience with language is different than the person speaking to you, you may not understand them. So just because you read 11th grade wording doesn't mean a person with less than 8th grade reading skills, living in a neighborhood where certain words are never used commonly, may not understand you. So I don't buy that. Or we'll read it to them. Consent forms, I don't buy that. No way. So this one is what it looks like. They use an ice cream label. Why? What do you think they use an ice cream label? Anyone? I do the Socratic thing, I'll point. Come on. What does that remind you of?
Simple.
Description label? Essentially, the theoretical framework behind using that, or the concept, perceptual, is that if you have the analytical skills to respond to questions related to this label, then you will likely have the skills to read a prescription label and other kinds of medical information. So, for example, how much saturated fat is there? And those aren't easy questions for the average person who does not read labels. So is it really a label literacy test or a health literacy test? Does this abide by those five constructs that I proposed? No, not any of them. The realm, rapid estimate of adult literacy in medicine, R, this is a shorter form. Anybody ever use that one? I really don't like it. Again, I'm not gonna sit here and tell you, oh, this is great. And so many papers are published using the realm. What is it? It's a word recognition test. The original realm has 60 words, and the person would be asked to read from a list, and they're the person taking the scores, which is check off whether or not they got it right. If you say, for example, I'll show you, bear in mind it's a word recognition test. But that's all you need to know. All the other stuff you don't need to know. It's true. So this is pretty much what it is. Fat, flu, pill are not scored. Take that out, they're not scored. Now, allergic, jaundice, anemia, fatigue, directed colitis, constipation, osteoporosis. What do you see happening as you read through that list? What changes? But what about the changes? The number of syllables. Because any readability assessment is the number of words in a sentence, number of syllables in a word. The longer the more syllables, the more difficult they're considered to read. The most common, and we've said this before in the other lectures, the most common words universally are mono and bisyllabic words around the world. Something? They didn't use these to score because they're monosyllabic. They're very easy to read. And most people would get them right, so why score? But then allergic, if you say allergy, if you answer allergy, it's wrong in this test. If you answer directed and you said direct, it's wrong in this test. You're on the way, but it's wrong. That's the way they score. And so I'm not particularly fond of this because they tried to do a Spanish version. What happened with the Spanish version? It didn't work. Why? Because when they did the study, they found that it was the results were dichotomous. There were people who could not read at all, and the other half of the people, or the other side, had read most of the words. These Latinos are either super smart or don't read at all. What's going on? Well, what's going on is that in Spanish there's a high grapheme phoneme association. And if you can read, you can pronounce these words and go on and pronounce, but still not know what they mean.
It doesn't take much mental energy, right, to realize that this has no relationship to the most important aspect of health. I mean, you know, back when people used to say, oh, Africans can't tell time and all this nasty stuff, they end up having as good an adherence rate as anyone else, particularly if they were paired with a peer or somebody who helped them out. They don't have to read a lick. I mean, I'm sure a bunch of them were totally, illiterate, and yet they, you know, do just as well as very highly educated people here. I mean, yeah, it's pretty interesting that.
But it's used as a screening tool, which is okay. It's okay, but is this a health literacy tool or health literacy measure? It's screening for your ability to recognize and pronounce a word. How about those five constructs? None of them. Not to my knowledge. But they use it as a screening tool. It's considered the easiest health, and I'll show you. This is very interesting. I think this is important to point out. Welcome, Martha. This test is critical appraisal of health literacy indices, reveal variable underlying constructs, narrow content, and psychometric weaknesses. It's a very good paper. This one, though, development of the next one. I'll get right to it then. The salsa 50. I should have had some Latin music playing as a backdrop to this one, right? But development of an easy-to-use Spanish health literacy test. I have to share this with everyone who's blown away by this. The test is better than the realm. It's based on the realm, but it's not just a word recognition test. It's also a word meaning test, which is better than just word recognition. But look at this paper published. This is the original developers of this salsa, and they say this study is intended to develop and validate a health literacy test. They go further to say that it's based on the realm, known as the most easily administered tool for assessing health literacy in English. That is not a health literacy tool. In fact, if you go on the ARC website for realm, they'll say that this is not a health literacy tool. And yet, they say it is in this paper. Did they do their homework? Although it's still a good effort. But I think we have to be very careful how we use words. And then the test of functional health literacy in adults, another health literacy instrument, no, it is not. Baker, Williams, and Parker never said they developed that survey. They never said it was a health literacy measure. It's a test of comprehension. So this is one of the problems we have in the field. To health literacy, buzzword, buzzword, buzzword. Let's get more specific, let's get more comprehensive. So, subject reads a word, chooses between a key correct and distract the incorrect word. And I do not know how to know, I apologize for the fuzziness. But próstata, glándula, circulación, no sé. Which one? Próstata. Nancy. If this is the key word, it could be either or, it could be a key word of distractor. Does prostate, gland, circulation, don't know. And so they have to recognize the word, they have to know the word to get a correct answer. It's really a word association test, isn't it? Like almost a thesaurus. You know, that means gland, that's, or that associated with the gland. Prostate, gland. Gripe, sano, enfermo. Cold, healthy, sick. So it's not really thesauric-like because it's just a word association test. But you have to know the meaning. This is better, actually, than a word recognition test. And they have done a lot of... They actually did the psychometrics on this one. I'd love to sit down with you on that one. Yes.
What happens if they think they don't know? And that's wrong? If you say you don't know, you get that wrong?
Yeah.
Is that how they score it?
Like, if you have to choose what the right associated word... Well, they're wrong. So, menstrual.
No, but I'm saying you got the third column that's I don't know, right?
Yeah.
So what happens if you pick that?
Is
that
I don't know?
That's wrong?
I'm not sure how they scored that. I'm not sure how they scored that. They just tossed it out. Did they include that as a wrong answer?
No.
You're saying anything?
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I'm not going to think that. But do you see the point here? That they give you a word, and if you know the word, you can make an association between two other words. And, but does that measure health literacy? Or is that a reading comprehension, or reading a word comprehension measure? Yet they say it's a health literacy measure. It doesn't fit any of the constructs. Learning, knowledge, right? Self-management, skills, none of them. The test of short functional health literacy in adults, the short test. TAFLA, the gold standard, but has no clinical application whatsoever. None. And what does it do? What the clause is I want to take a paragraph, any paragraph, and just take every fifth word, say, just choose a number between 5 and 7, and then delete that word in that paragraph. And this is developed in the '50s by Williams. And then give that to, say, a student, and then they would have to fill in the blanks. So it's a measure of their comprehension of that. And it's basically, it's based on gestalt psychology, where you're bringing that circle, if I draw half a circle, 3/4 of a circle, what do you see? You see a circle. That's the gestalt. So that's based on gestalt psychology close. And they use it in a very interesting way. 4 numeracy items, then this is the short form, 2 reading passages. The first is at 4th grade level, upper GI, and the second, Medicaid Bill of Rights and Responsibility. And let me give an example of that. Sorry about that. Your doctor has sent you to have a blank x-ray. And so now you have to fill that in. But the difference between the original test of comprehension using the close, which basically mutilates the passage, and that's the key word for that. We mutilate that paragraph by taking out every 5th or every 6th or the 7th word. Here, they give them options. You must have a, well, anybody want to fill that in, Mark?
Well, just looking at it, assuming I know nothing and understand nothing, but if I have a comprehension of grammar, like in the second instance, you must have a what kind of stomach. Mm-hmm. I could look at that and say, well, there's only one adjective there, empty. So that must be the right one, even if I know nothing about the test. So I mean, is the goal to, so it depends what you're assessing.
Yep. You know, this is one of two passages they use. They said the original top has 3, 4th grade, 6th grade, 10th grade. And which is problematic because anyone, say, in 5th grade may read from 4th to 6th grade. So there's really no one to beware when you do readability assessments. Getting back to what Dr. Spear was saying, if you never took a GI, then you never had one, then how would you possibly be able to know? Well, they give you a passage to read about it. So I'll include that in here. But they give you something to read, and then they ask you to do this. And so I could see the association. If I read it, I should be able to answer. If I read it, didn't understand it, does that mean I have poor health literacy? No. This is just a test of comprehension. The original test in the 50s, 55 in fact, was published. It's a test of comprehension.
Good.
Yeah.
But just for argument's sake. You must have an empty stomach when you come for the task, right?
That is it. That is
now,
it.
If you put that sentence in front of me and say, what does it mean? Then that would be a test of comprehension. But filling in the blanks is a test of grammatic aptitude or something. It's just like sports announcers and athletes who don't know how to use adverbs. They hit the ball solid. So this isn't really measuring comprehension, but it may be an indirect way of getting it. Because measuring comprehension is, you give them a sentence and you say, what does this mean? Does it mean I can't eat before the test? Does this mean if I have anemia, right, or whatever, my blood count is low, I shouldn't have the test?
One of the things that, I'll be honest with you, I've always had a tough time with the top. We've used it in some of our studies because you have to go with what you have at some point. But once you start being critical of it and you move forward in it, you don't have to use it. So we did a study, for example, in diabetes, health literacy study, we used animation, and that survey was shown to be very reliable and valid. I don't have to use the TOFA anymore in my studies because I have something now that's disease-specific. One of the problems with TOFA is this relevant to me? Is this important to me? What do I care about a GI swallow? That's what you were saying. Do I really care about it? And so doesn't that impact how people respond to reading the passage? Did you ever pick up a book and not read one chapter into it and toss it? I don't like this. I don't care who wrote it. And it's true. So that's what they do. It's a screening tool, it's a test of comprehension, and that was a question on this one I wanted about. I had to share this with you. But it's been shown to work and be very reliable in identifying people. That's because at some level, when you go to the 10th grade, when they have multiple blanks, they raise the bar so high, I believe, that many people do not respond well to it. Even people who are fairly well educated can't relate to it. I didn't read that passage. They give you a certain amount of time to read it. It's a lot of factors. It's okay for research purposes. It has no clinical application. And does it measure health literacy as measured by those five constructs we discussed? No. And this is the gold standard. So what we're doing then, when we put together the diabetes health literacy survey, we have items on general knowledge, items on self-management, including things like self-monitoring and taking care of your feet, and then clinical management, going to an eye doctor, having a lipid test. So health literacy is not, it's quite really abstract right now, I think, in my head. Nobody really honed down on it in terms of how do we define it. I keep reading paper after paper after paper. I mean, you just look at this one. I mean, this is which drives me nuts. Why can't they paraphrase at least? Health literacy refers to an individual's ability to seek, understand, and use health information. Where did that come from? The IOM definition. And so we see this over and over and over. It's like reviewing a paper for a journal on diabetes where you see the same thing. Diabetes is epidemic. Hello? Can you tell me something different? Seriously. It's tiring to read those things, and nobody's going beyond that thought. So, do I need to hear this? No, we already know that. That's general health knowledge that everybody should know. That diabetes is an epidemic in this country, and nobody really knows, except me, that it's endemic in the globe. Because when I say that, people say, no epidemiology, you can't say that.
What do you think the implications are of it's like cash incentives to health literacy? So I would say, do you need to know, for the things that are good for you, maybe it is the only thing you need to know that if you do this, you will get paid. And I would say there's an interesting, and I don't know if Martin has a comment on this.
That's a research question.
There's interesting, in JAMA, since you had breast cancer, up there. And so many medical decisions now have a fuzzy gray area where it's not really clear. And it was about, it's about the ethics of incentives for breast cancer screening, particularly women like 40 or 50, where it gets pretty fuzzy. And you should have an informed, and then that requires a very high level of literacy. And should we really start looking at metrics of how do you understand probability and chance that physicians don't even understand those things.
I agree with you.
I remember when I was in college, I worked one summer for a newspaper, and I wrote something for them, and they handed it back, and they said the average reader of this paper has a sixth grade education, and so I had to change the way I communicated it. So health literacy, in a sense, blames the victim being the patient, for the inability or the failure of the provider to communicate with them in a way that they will understand.
Yeah. I'm not sure that there was a point you might both remember, because where in the medical literature it was saying that it really is not the provider's responsibility, but the patient's responsibility to take care of himself. This was about 15 years ago. I'm dating myself. Really, and that there was this movement to push responsibility onto the patient to learn and manage their disease, and that doesn't work. I can't at this point say, with the way our health plans and systems are, with so little time with the patient, the way I did it didn't work in practice years ago where I spent a lot of time. So I don't think that's going to make a difference. What we need is we need interventions that will help us to assess and improve health literacy, but measuring it is hugely important. So what we're proposing, I've discussed with Carol on R21 that's going next month, is what I call health literacy assessment and measurement program manager, health lab manager. And basically, it's a web-based tool that was developed. The platform is from the Office of Information Technology. It's called OMAGE. And Rose Rocio is doing some wonderful work with that. And we can use that platform and take on the consumer side, and this is a project funded by RAND right now, but we're going to pretty much qualitatively assess by cognitive engineering and focus discussion groups, not focus groups, similar. We're going to pretty much assess what people feel about using computers and tablets to answer surveys. It's a pretty much aging, the Asian population. And then we use animation in that same tablet to teach them. So we have different constructs, and we have an animated video for each construct. And we give them to them piecemeal, not all at once. Then this information, I'm answering that, goes to the OMAGE system by the internet to Martin's office, where now you can see when he came to see, he comes down to see, it could be in real time, he could be in his office waiting. Oh, he doesn't realize that he needs to know general health history. But he needs to know this about his condition. He didn't, so, you know, he's not answering that correctly. Spend a little bit amount of time you have focusing on what they don't, what they need to know, as opposed to what they already know already. And I think that's a very cool and innovative concept, because now that information that goes to Dr. Shapiro can go into the electronic health record. And then what we're doing is we're meeting our responsibility to improve your health. And again, the National Academy is saying, improving your health literacy is as important as managing your disease. That should be part of your plan as a physician, my plan, my plan. We should be including that as part of our management plan. We don't have the wherewithal yet to do it, and we're hoping Health Plan Manager is the beginning of that. And so that's where we're at right now in the future, for future studies, that's what we're doing now. Well, thanks for coming, and thank you for your interaction. And then we're going to Mars, and we're going to do health literacy on Mars.